Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Cut Through Vine for July 15th, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me is almost every single week in our five-year history, Tim Shiflett. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, and Catherine is away this week, and so join us in her place is Stephen Golden. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yes, just so people will be familiar with who you are, just tell us a few things politically about yourself.
Sure, absolutely. Well, good to be on. I'm Steve Golden. I hail originally from Maryland, but I've lived here in Georgia for about 6 years now, having worked in politics for all six of those years. Graduated from Emory University. I am now a student at Georgia State College of Law, and all the while, I somehow find time to be the executive vice president of Young Democrats in Georgia, and I also work with Southeastern Campaigns Group on a number of different races in 2012. So I keep myself busy, I guess.
Yes. Well, if you use passing the bar as a measure, you go to the best law school in the state of Georgia, even better Emory and UGA and wherever else hands out law degrees in the state.
That's the measure that I use.
Yeah, I'm a Georgia State alumni. I have 3 degrees from there, none of them law, but I happen to see that for many years running, and so I always think it's pretty impressive of one of my alma maters. Well, before we get into some of the topics, I was able to watch some political movies this past week, ones that just came on channels. One was Nixon and Elvis, and that's a freak show and just entertaining. But the other one was I finally saw Casino Jack about Jack Abramoff. I don't know who did this, if it was HBO or Showtime. Fascinating film that had this one line in it that I thought was so apropos of what the Republican Party is. At one point, a Democratic lobbyist looks at Jack Abramoff and says, "Jack, since communism fell, all the Republican Party is money, money, money." And I thought, isn't that the truth? Because it seems like everything they do, they tie it back to taxes. I mean, usually groups like the Christian Coalition, I mean, at least they would be about something else. Now they seem to want to talk about taxes more than they do, you know, social issues. I mean, you can say that's for good or bad, but it really is this one note. And I saw this poll this past week that showed that support for the, you know, unencumbered free enterprise system has fallen again to its lowest level in many, many years. And so you look at that, and it seems like the Republican Party is pigeonholing themselves once again. Don't know if either one of y'all has seen those movies, but I thought it was interesting. We can go into getting some other things that happened this week. And one was a lot of polls came out. And the Pew Research Foundation had a new poll out, and it showed not only was the president leading, but he led among every single group seemingly. Now, of course, you could, you know, gun owners in, you know, Idaho or something, of course, he's not leading, but even led among men. And that's what struck me. I sent that poll to both of y'all. Steve, you being our new guest today, I'll let you the first word on this. What did you make of those crosstabs in that Pew poll?
You know, what I made of it is that, you know, Obama is winning the message war. You know, ultimately, that's what this is about. And I mentioned this to you guys before we got on the air, but, you know, the way that I look at it is that if somehow Mitt Romney is able to take, and the Republican Party are able to take this election and make it an economic election, this is about, you know, the fact that we're not where we want to be, we're not where Obama promised us we would be. If they're able to successfully make that the message of this election, they have a chance of winning. But the problem is that Mitt Romney himself is such a flawed candidate and that Obama and his campaign have really effectively been able to, you know, go to everybody, you know, including men, including including women. I mean, you know, across the board, the Obama campaign and Democrats have been able to change the conversation from the economy. So what I made of it is that, you know, the messaging war, Obama's winning. and that what the campaign is doing is striking a chord with people because, you know, frankly, I think people are tired of hearing or are tired of, you know, these, you know, millionaires and billionaires running the American government. And Mitt Romney pretty much embodies that in a very literal sense.
Yeah, Steve, I can see. Tim, I can see exactly why I have Steve on as a guest. He said Mitt Romney's a fallen candidate, piggybacking on our discussion of last week. But anyway, Tim, I sent you these poll numbers earlier in the week, right when they came out, and I said, look at the crosstab page in particular. What struck you about it? Because there were so many different numbers to look at.
Well, the first thing that struck me, let me play devil's advocate and trash the poll, okay? It's a poll of nearly 3,000 adults. Over 20% of the people interviewed in this poll were not registered voters. That being said, I would believe that Obama would be winning among college graduates. I would be willing to believe that Obama would be winning among the poorest voters. I would be willing to believe that in age groups, the younger the age group, the better the president was doing. Now, the one I don't believe is the gender. There is no way that the president is going to be winning men. If he were, we would be looking at a massive landslide, which we are not. Male voters have been trending Republican since the 68 election. They have been moving in the direction of the Republican Party. The last Democratic candidate that really racked up the male vote was Lyndon Johnson in 64 and won the biggest popular vote landslides of all time. But still, this poll does have some encouraging news for the president. And what it looks like, if you take everything into consideration, add this poll to other polls that you're seeing, I still believe the president has a lead, but not as big a lead as he had 4 years ago. And that cuts across all groups. You see what I'm saying, David?
I see what you're saying now, but I will say, I mean, if you take enough polls and they show that maybe the gender gap won't completely go away, but it'll be reduced in President Obama's favor, that can't be bad for him. That was what's striking. I tell you another thing I did think, you mentioned education levels. I'm glad you mentioned that. It was funny that if you have a college degree, you support Obama. If you don't have any college, just a high school degree, you support Obama. If you have some college, I can't remember if Romney won that group or it was the tightest group. Maybe it was just tied
well,
within the margin of error. I thought that was kind of a little bit of education is a bad thing.
Yeah, where the president will have his problem is the middle class, white, older male voters and married couples as well. He will have a little problem right there. That's going to be his weak point.
Yeah, and I tell you another interesting crosstab out of that. And I've seen this in more than one poll. It was in that Arizona poll that I found so fascinating, too. While the president does terrible in relation to other groups of voters 65 and over, he actually does better among voters like 45 to 65, or maybe it was 50 to 65. Then he does that next stage down, that group that's, I guess, the Generation X voters. Then, of course, in the youngest voters, he does great again. And I find that strange. Why, Tim, well, I guess that's the age group you're in. Why does your age group do better than my age group when you would think it would be the reverse?
Well,
it would just follow this nice, clean arc.
You would think so, yes. And you know what? I really don't think my age group is doing better. Like I said, this poll was of 3,000 adults.
Yeah, but it was more than just this one. If it was just this one, like you said, we could throw it away, but it's more than one poll. I mean, it's state polls and national polls, and there's something there.
If the president scores well in my age group, David, he's going to go on to an easy victory in November. Let's put it that way. Mitt Romney has to at least break even and win my age group by a little bit in order to have any chance at winning. Don't you believe that, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Mitt Romney, I mean, Mitt Romney is going to get some inroads from where Obama did in my age group, you know, the college, you know, the college age and young professional group. But he's going to have to get the middle age and those soon to be retired and retired. And he's really going to have to firm those up in order to get those age groups, because those are, in recent years, more traditionally Republican leaning than Democratic leaning. So if, you know, he really needs to kind of get across the board gains in order to win this election, I think.
Yeah, David, to give you a point of what I'm saying here, the 65 and older group, this poll shows that Mitt Romney is only 4 points ahead. If that were somehow true, man, he'd be in just awful trouble. He has got to score heavily among the 65 and older group. That's the only demographic that John McCain won. That's the only group that John McCain won. Mitt Romney has to win that group handily, because they all vote, and he needs them to vote heavily for them. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Oh, I do. I believe he has to, you know, lock down that group in a big way. But here becomes the problem. If here comes, I guess, the strategy. It's kind of like when you go a new place for the first time. You don't know the way. You hear the map. You get the directions. You hunt. You look around. And once you've found the way, the next time, the third time, and the fourth time you go, it's easier. The president's campaign figure out the strategy one time. Couldn't they follow some hallmarks of the roadmap? Now, I know that he's the incumbent. He has to take some ownership of the economy. It gets a little trickier. But as far as the, particularly like the message persuasion, micro-targeting, getting out the vote, he's done it before, whereas Romney's team has never faced a general with the, you know, current team, if you will. So you see what I'm saying? I mean, the president's done it before. Couldn't he kind of coalesce this thing in as we get closer to November? I mean, Stephen, does that make any sense, or is that just crazy talk?
No, I think you're right. I mean, the Obama campaign has an advantage right now in the sense that over the past 4 years, we've seen the Republican Party we've seen members of the Republican Party, at least, you know, if not the whole, but, you know, the Obama campaign has some brilliant minds. They can extrapolate to the whole, you know, have been railing against some of these quote-unquote social programs. You know, there have been people who have made statements that are not completely backing Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. You know, the Obama campaign has worked to try and close the donut, or the Obama administration, rather, has worked to try and close the donut hole in Medicare. They have, with the Affordable Care Act, the Obama campaign can really discuss the narrative of improving these already existing programs that are wildly popular in this older age demographic. So, you know, I think you're absolutely right. If Mitt Romney cannot win the you know, 65 and older age group handily, probably more so than John McCain did, I would even say, he's in some deep stuff, because that's the group that should be his bread and butter.
Right. David,
Tim, let's
I need to interrupt you. We have a caller here, and I'm going to let you talk to whoever it is.
Well, caller, I'm not sure what area code you're from. Come on into the kudzu line.
Are you with us, caller?
Tim, I tell you, hello, are you on the kudzu line?
Is that me? Yes, I was just listening for a minute. That's okay.
Oh, is this our guest?
Yeah, I guess so. I was just listening to the conversation.
Miss Williams, then, if you'll hold off a little bit, we'll bring you on around that 7:30 time slot we talked about, if that's better for your people that you've informed. We'll get with you in just a few minutes then. Yeah, Tim, I tell you what, as we grow more and more, maybe eventually we'll have enough of a budget to hire a call screener But people hear our podcast and think, what in the world are they doing? We basically are our own call screeners, if you will. So that's just one of the lovely things about, you know, live podcasting over the internet as we do it with no producer, you know. So whatever you hear and you think, man, their producer stinks, well, it's also the talent, so. Well, anyway, Tim, that was going to be your last word on this, but I'll let you have the first word when I pivot. Two more polls came out. The one I found the most intriguing, because I think it's part of a bigger theory. Cell phone owner or smartphone owners, which I guess are increasingly becoming all cell phones, are more and more likely to back the president. Now, if you go, oh, well, yeah, the old folks with the jitterbugs and the young folks, you know, getting, you know, these cell phones, of course, that just goes to demographic. But I remember in history lessons when I was, you know, political science at Shorter, 20 years ago now, getting old, they would talk about the 32 election and how it showed that Franklin Roosevelt was going to lose because telephone polling was in its infancy, and they would call up and they would find out that people that had telephones were much more likely to be Republican. So if you believe the polls at the time, it said, you know, soon to be President Roosevelt was done. My theory is that people that are more likely to dump their home phone lines, like my wife and I have, and have just cell phones, you're so far less likely to get polled. When I had a home phone line, around this time, I'd probably get about 5 polls a cycle. Since I have gone home, I mean, cell phone only, I have been polled 0 times. That's, you know, I guess an election cycle and a half, if you will. Also, I don't get any robocalls anymore, which you could say, hey, that's a good thing. But as far as, you know, politics goes, I think since, you know, you can't poll cell phones the right way yet, I think Democrats are more likely to be undersampled with a lot of these polls. So I think that some of these Democratic, you know, polls we see the Democrats are winning. They could be winning by more. If they're slightly losing, they could come up and win. If they're losing by a lot, they're probably still going to lose. But you kind of catch my drift. Tim, do you think there's anything to this smartphone users?
Well, it could be. Now, the poll you alluded to with Franklin Roosevelt was actually in 1936, and it was taken of the subscribers of a magazine called the Literary Digest by that magazine of its subscribers. And the Literary Digest subscriber list tended to be more conservative. So it showed that Alf Landon was actually going to be President Roosevelt, when in reality, Alf Landon carried 2 states and got literally destroyed. And it was such a bad thing that the Literary Digest actually went out of business. So, you know, these polls can get serious, right? So
the theory of technology was still a salient point.
Yeah.
That if being technology said, emerges, things happen, and it takes a cycle or two to catch up with it. And the way the cell phones are kind of blocked from telephone listings, it may take more cycles to come up with it catch up with it, if you will.
That being said, I look at the breakdown of this poll. Now, it shows the president well ahead among people with college degrees, as the Pew poll did, but this poll shows Mitt Romney over 20 points ahead among smartphone users who also happen to be retired. Now, that would be more in line with what Mitt Romney would need to be doing with retired people. The one among this that makes me scratch my head, Obama up by 19 among wealthy subscribers. I don't know. But you did bring up a good point. Are these people being included in mainstream polling? Is somebody going out and calling cell phone users? I mean, there's how do they do that, for starters? when cell phone users, I mean, your cell phone's not listed in a telephone book or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very primitive means of starting to list things going on now. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much harder to get in there. And, of course, the rules and the laws for calling cell phones is so much different. Well, Steve, I'm going to let you answer this, even though I know you called us up on your rotary phone that
right.
has a separate black handpiece with the wooden box, correct? But I'll
yeah.
still let you get your opinions on here.
So, well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I actually do own one of those phones that you mentioned, one of the ones that doesn't even have a rotary on it. But nonetheless, it's not what I'm calling on today. And David, I think you bring up an absolutely correct point. You know, I'm 24 years old. I have had the same cell phone number that I'm calling on right now since I was 11. I have never missed voting in an election, and I have never been polled or robocalled on this phone, ever. And I don't have a home phone number. And I am one of the new generation of voters that is going to go out and vote in this election and will never be polled. And it's one of those things that, you know, that I've actually talked about with people for a number of years, you know, when Obama's underperforming in a certain age demographic or when Obama's generally underperforming is, you know, I say, well, what about me? You know, that's the problem with polls is that they have not, the technology has not caught up to the reality of modern society. And that is that, you know, I currently live in a house with myself, a 24-year-old, a 21-year-old, and a 56-year-old. And all three of us have cell phones, and we have no home phone line. So, and David, like you mentioned, this is becoming more and more common, even among people that are not in my age demographic. So I think this poll, you know, although it probably has its flaws in and of itself, because frankly, we're talking about we're talking about the fact that, you know, cell phone users are under-polled with reference to a poll about cell phone users. So how accurate that is, especially when we're discussing the issue of richer Americans, I think that's, you know, an astute point. But I think it underlies the point, which is that modern polling does not reflect the reality of modern society and where modern society is found. And also, poor African Americans, it's been shown that poor African Americans may be more likely to have the same sort of, you know, cell phone, no home phone kind of deal. And in that case, we're also underrepresenting another completely Democratic demographic.
Yeah.
Okay, but let me ask a question, David. We do know, however, that a lot of polls in these different races and elections nailed the results beforehand. We have ample evidence of that. How is it they do that? Do they somehow take into account the fact that they can't reach a certain group, or how do they nail these results if they can't get to all these voters?
I think they have to do some trial and error. They may be having to call more people out of the Democratic sample, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then if you have to call to get more Democrats, you could be having to call more older voters, and maybe that's why you're getting the numbers being a little out of skew in our favor among older voters just to get enough Democrats. I mean, that could happen, but, I mean, you know, Stephen here, I mean, politically active, he's probably the kind of person, if you look and go, man, this guy's voted, you know, four straight cycles, somebody would want to get to him at some point. And obviously
mm-hmm.
they haven't been able to. I've dropped off the political grid, if you will, for a good two cycles now since I dropped my home phone. People ask, oh, when I first did this, well, how can you do that? I was like, well, I have a phone. My wife now has a phone. I mean, we both have phone numbers. One's our old home phone number, so we don't even lose it. But last time I checked, nobody ever calls the house. Nobody wants to talk to the building. They want to talk to the people in the
mm-hmm.
building, so people need phones, not the structure.
I still get back to the thing that somehow they are still nailing some of these results. So how many guys do you think there are like you two that cannot possibly be polled because they have cell phones or never have been? What percentage of the vote do you think we're looking at here?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sure somebody's done that number. Y'all are in front of computers doing Google search, but I bet it's, you know, 10-20% of the American population. I wouldn't be shocked if it was as high as 20, because I know more people that I work with, they don't have a home phone, and they're, you know, sort of 40. Steve, you probably know, you probably see half these people you know.
Yeah, I mean, I do not know a single person my age that does not live with their parents currently, that is out on their own, that has a home phone. You know, even my parents, they have a home phone. We have a little, you know, a beach house, and they're like, why would we get a home phone at the beach house? You know, we're having cell phones, and they're even considering dumping the home phone at their house. So it's becoming more and more economically feasible, and frankly, just makes more sense. So I think your, you know, 10-15% number is probably about accurate, and I would say it's also growing.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so according to this poll, then that would reflect on the president's numbers. They would be underreported, right?
Yeah, that would be underreported, and very possibly. I mean, we'll see. I mean, and I guess you could start using some different elections. Of course, 2010 was such an indicator where so many more Republicans showed up. That was the overriding thing, not undersampling due to cell phones. Well, let's kind of stick and move pretty quick, because I know we got our guest that's coming on any minute. But I do want to talk about something to a specific state, not just nationally, and that was the Texas Senate race. Poll after poll these days is showing that Ted Cruz is now leading David Dewhurst. Now, I don't want to make it more about polls. I want to make it more about the Tea Party and Ted Cruz here. You know, David Dewhurst is seen as more of a moderate Republican, not really moderate when you look at his record, and Ted Cruz is much more of the Tea Party candidate. We're seeing this again and again and again, where these Tea Party candidates win, and in some places, like Indiana, last time in Delaware, that these candidates have cost the party their seats. I don't know that we have a credible enough candidate. Maybe if we had a Bill White running this time in this race, we might could win this thing. Or is the narrative going to lock in to where maybe even if the Democrats don't win that Senate seat, the president does better in Texas? House seats like Nick Lampson's district go Democratic, whereas they might have gone Republican. Does this have an effect against Republicans in Texas if Cruz does prevail, Tim?
You know, I don't think we've had enough cycles of Tea Party activism yet to figure that out, to be honest with you, Debbie. We do know that in 2010, people like Christine O'Donnell and some of that crowd probably cost the Republicans control of the U.S. We do know that. And we are getting some feedback here. I don't know. Do y'all hear me okay now?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. We just don't know yet. That being said, what we also don't know is just how strong the Tea Party is getting. Are they to the point where they can basically emerge as the dominant group in the Republican Party? I mean, here in Texas, looks like another Tea Party guy is going to get a nomination over a guy that was anointed as the establishment candidate. And as these people win, they're driving the GOP further and further to the right. And if they box themselves in on the far right end of the spectrum, it's going to have to start hurting them nationally. Maybe there was a little something to this Texas presidential poll we were talking about, showing it much, much, much closer than it should be right now. I mean, we're not going to say that Mitt Romney's going to lose Texas. That's not going to happen. But he might win it by, I don't know, 7 or 8 points instead of 15 to 20 points. that's going to have to affect the Republicans down ballot, like you were just talking about, right?
Yeah, I think Nick Lampson's one to definitely look at. Well, Stephen, I had to put the phone down. Somebody was calling me. I mean, talking to me here at my event. If you hadn't said a word about this Texas thing, get it in.
Well, I think you both bring up some really good points. I actually read an article on Politico a couple days ago, which basically said, the crux of it said that this year, whereas Democrats should, by every stretch of the imagination, lose the Senate, that it looks like it's entirely possible that we won't because of really weak candidates in many states. Texas is probably not one of those states because, frankly, we don't have a very strong candidate. In Texas, he's a former lieutenant general or something of that sort, but, he's not, like you said, Tim, he's not Bill White. Bill White, I think could win against Ted Cruz, but look at Indiana. We're probably, we have a real chance of winning Indiana because, I'm a Democrat, and I would think about voting for what's his name, the old incumbent.
Luger. Dick Luger.
Dick Luger. I have a professor originally from Indiana who is gay and Democrat. Luger, because he's seen as moderate. He's seen as kind of a person of the people. And Murdoch is not. So I think that the crux of what we're discussing here is absolutely true, that what we're going to see this year is these Tea Party candidates who I do believe are kind of becoming the more dominant faction of the Republican Party, but we're going to see them, come out of primaries, but ultimately the Republican Party as a whole and the independents that we always discuss, the average American is an independent-leaning Republican. I think that's going to change if the Tea Party has dominance over politics, because what we're going to see is these independents, like my friend Eric, who is a fiscal conservative, social moderate, social liberal, who the minute that Sarah Palin was nominated as McCain's vice president, said, "Well, it looks like I'm voting for Obama," because that's the person that the Republican Party is going to be losing. So I think weak candidates like Ted Cruz could see the Republican Party losing races where, frankly, they shouldn't be.
Yeah, Joe Donnelly,
point,
I think
David.
That he decided to run. He was like a sacrificial lamb to Dick Luger, and then sure enough, the kiss of death, if Democrats like you in a Republican primary, you're no good. Well, I don't want to keep our guest holding longer. Tim, do you have one more statement, or are you ready to segue?
Well, yeah, I wanted to say one more thing because Steve made a good point that people, the average American, being independent but leaning conservative, what's going to happen is these people are going to move a little back to the left in the spectrum, and they're going to become pure independents, and they're going to start cherry-picking these races, and they're going to look down on them, and they're going to see these Tea Party candidates, and they're not going to vote for them, and Democrats are going to start winning some down-ballot races that they shouldn't be winning, and it may take a cycle or two for that to come, but it is going to come.
Yes. Well, now I'd like to go ahead and welcome our special guest to the program, running for state house in Georgia this year,
David
Dorian Williams.
Our guest is not on.
Well, and of course, Tim's running the board. Well, Miss Williams, if we got our wires crossed, I know we had scheduled around 7:30, 7:35. So please do call back in. We sometimes just don't recognize numbers right off on the board. And of course, if anybody's working with her, can text her, tell her to call right back in, Tim, the moment you see her back on the board. Or see that number,
will
you do. Tell me, jump in, and we'll get going. Real quickly, since we're talking about local stuff, and this may be something we end up asking Ms. Williams about, the T-Splost. It has gotten so much attention recently, and Tim, I bet in your county you probably have things to vote on. If I were to pick up a Floyd County Democratic ballot, then the only thing that's going to be on there is the T-Splost. So I begin to wonder, do I even show up for this thing? If that's the only thing I'm voting on, and I'm not the kind of person that switches over to the side just because there's
races. Okay, David, if I could interrupt you, I believe our guest is on with us.
Okay. Ms. Williams, thanks for coming back in. You're running for Georgia State House. Just start off on the kudzu vine. Tell us a little about yourself.
All right. I certainly will. Thank you. Well, I'm running for the State House for several reasons. We have a crisis in our classrooms. Students are being taught to take tests, and teachers aren't being compensated adequately. And the current legislature has undermined the value that our public schools play in our society by not providing adequate funding. And so teachers are fairly demoralized, and students don't have a chance to really learn the skills of critical thinking and problem solving. And since I'm an educator and I teach in a seventh grade classroom, I know exactly what all of that has done in my classroom to my students. And it's not good. So that is the first reason that I am running. My background is that I have been a teacher for about 30 years. I have taught everything from preschool through eighth grade. And as an educator, I have been an advocate for children and families. I also serve on the board of directors for Viewpoint Health, which is the regional system program that manages the mental health, the state mental health system in the three county area of Gwinnett, Rockdale, and Newton. And that's also a chance to advocate for students and their families. I've been involved in the Rockdale County Democratic Party since 2006 as a post holder, and for most of that time I served as their treasurer on the executive board. I've also been a small business owner. For 8 years, I had a business in California that I ran.
Yeah, sounds like a very background with a lot on education, which is the number one expenditure in Georgia state government. Or I know it certainly was under Democrats in the 90s, certainly, and I think it still retains that. Even with all the budget cuts since 2002, because I, too, am a teacher, and what's the sad state of affairs is they would just take education funding back to, say, circa 1999, 2000. It would just be like a dream world. I mean, we're not even talking about a bunch of new money. We're just talking about going to a decade or more ago.
Right, exactly.
Well, you mentioned Rockdale County and that area. Where is your district located for those of folks just listening and not looking at your website or anything?
The district is partway through Rockdale County, north of I-20, about halfway up the county's east to west county lines. And then there's a piece that runs along the interstate, again, north of the interstate, through DeKalb County, the southern end there, through the city of Lithonia and out through the unincorporated part of Lithonia, just past Panola Road.
That would sound like a Democratic or swing district at worst for those of us that are Democrats. Is it currently held by Democrat, Republican, open seat? What's it like?
This is a newly created district, so there's no incumbent. It's about 60, well, in 2010, in the primary, 75% of the voters voted Democratic. So it's strongly Democratic.
Yes. Okay, so no, definitely sounds like a busy primary then, it being a newly created seat, which with the Republican legislature being in control of redistricting, I guess they had to put those voters somewhere since, as we know, Rockdale County has trended so heavily Democratic in the past, say, decade. Well, I'm on the show with other folks, and so I want to move it around. I can come with questions as well, but I'm going to start off. Steve, questions for Ms. Williams.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Williams, thanks for having us on. I do want to mention that I think you have the best campaign manager in the business, and Joel, who's a really good friend of mine.
Fabulous, too.
Well, good. We can agree on that. It's a good point. And also, I know that your district is like 70% of what used to be my other good friend, Representative Kendrick's district, and she's now pushed up a little bit farther north, so I know you're in a great area. Well, I wanted to ask you, you know, education is obviously probably your number one priority, as it is for me, and I believe you also recently got the endorsement of the GAE, which is fantastic. So I guess the question I would ask you would involve probably the number one education question I have, which is, you know, what do you think we need to do with the HOPE Scholarship? What do you think we need to do to improve higher education here in Georgia? Because, you know, I think that's something that's a pretty big deal.
It is a pretty big deal. The HOPE Scholarship, I have discussed this in quite detail with Senator Ron Ramsey, and his comments have been that the HOPE Scholarship was not managed well because it didn't have the appropriate oversight. If it had had the oversight to it that was written into the original legislation, we would not have had to reduce the HOPE Scholarship. So part of my answer in response to that is then we need to make sure that that funding and that allocation is being managed just precisely exactly how it's supposed to be managed, because we need those funds to give to our students. I had a conversation yesterday with a professor at the new Georgia Gwinnett College, and he's very excited about what they're doing with higher education. And a lot of that is really focusing on engaging the students so that they really learn exactly what they need to learn. The funding for our higher education has been cut drastically. In the time I was doing my doctoral work from 2006 to just this past March, my tuition doubled. And we can't continue to allow that and expect that our students are going to be able to afford to go to college.
Absolutely. Good answer. I too am. No, go ahead.
Steve, if you've got more questions, you go ahead and ask them. And then if you don't, then pass it over to Tim. And that's something Catherine, Tim, and I have just done over time. And there's no way to expect you to know that procedure, so I apologize.
Yeah, it's okay. That's one of the perks that comes with guest hosting. Well, no, I just wanted to thank you for answering that. I mean, I'm also in – I go to Georgia State College of Law, and of course, you know, our tuition – will continue to increase. So, you know, I do wish you luck, and I will pass over to Tim for some more questions.
Thank you.
Good evening, Dr. Williams, and thank you for being on with us tonight. About 80% of the jobs in this country are provided by small businesses. What can the Georgia legislature do to improve the situation for small businesses here?
Well, I think there's several things. One is they need to make sure that when a new business is established and is viable, that they are offered every opportunity to be successful. And that might include things like some tax credits, some outside support. I'm not real familiar with all of the business kinds of things, but to me those seem like logical things that we would do because we know that small business hires a good percentage of our citizens.
Yes, they do. I couldn't let you get away without asking you about what I guess is the biggest political news in Georgia going on right now. And that is the issue of the T-SPLOST. What's your take on that?
Well, if you could see me, you'd know I was smiling. Because that is some issue. I have spent weeks researching T-SPLOST. In fact, the last 2 weeks of school, I researched it with my seventh graders. So, and we looked at all the pros and all the cons. And after school was out, more pros and more cons became apparent as the campaigns have developed for and against. In the end, what tipped me over to the yes side of teeth floss is that it will produce jobs and it will support economic development in Georgia. When I sat down with my county commissioner and he showed me the projects that are outlined just for Rockdale County, it made sense to me. And so while I completely understand why people are opposed to it, that was the thing that tipped me over, was the economic development.
Okay, then. Thank you for this. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to David for some more questions. David?
All right. Thank you.
I'm going to do a follow-up on the T-Splice. I noticed that polls are showing that it's less popular than it was, even both Republicans and Democrats. And they start talking about what will happen. And, it was, of course, this was on the last Constitution Day. What will happen if it doesn't pass? What will help provide transportation solutions? If you've already started having to research that, thinking about being in the state house and this thing, if it were to fail, I mean, what do you see as some of the plan B's?
I really have not thought about plan B's. In my own head, I think probably more mass transit ought to be in the plan. I think that's one of the reasons the Sierra Club is opposed to it. And that makes logical sense to me, but I really don't have a good answer for that.
Yes, and of course, I'm sure a lot of yours is not only focused throughout the area, but then in Rockdale County specifically, which I guess there are some park and rides on the east line of MARTA, but if there's some way they could extend that out, that would give Rockdale some new options in particular. Well, was there any issues that we hadn't asked you about that you'd like to tell the listeners about?
Well, I think another really key issue is this, what they have named the war on women. I think that is definitely in need of attention in the legislature. Someone to be on watch, someone to make sure that women's rights and opportunities are not cut, not taken back 50 years. Health questions and concerns ought to be, a woman ought to have that right to take care of those decisions herself with her doctor's advice. That turned out to be a really big issue in this last legislative session.
Yes. Well, one question we always let our candidate guest tell us about at the end, if someone's heard you, Dr. Williams, and they want to help your campaign, what are some ways they could do that?
There's a number of ways that you can help. I always need volunteers to come out and canvass with me. I've knocked on lots and lots of doors, but in the next 2 weeks, I hope to knock on many more doors. There's phone banking that can be done, and of course, contributions can be made through my website, www.friendsofdoreen.com, and Doreen is spelled D-O-R-E-E-N. There's a PayPal button there, and you can contribute there. You can also contact me with any other questions. As I've passed out cards to people, as I've knocked on doors, I've given them my telephone number and suggested that they call me and with any questions that they might have as they look at my website, study my positions, and see if they need more information than what I've already given them.
Yes. Well, we thank you for coming on the Kudzu Vine this evening and telling us about your campaign. We wish you best of luck here before the end of the month.
Well, thank you very much for having me tonight. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Yes, we talked a little bit about the T-Splice with Dr. Williams, but we were kind of getting into it, how not only has the thing become unpopular with Republicans, it's also dropping among Democrats. And right now, if these polls are correct, and it's not close, like some of these presidential polls we discussed, it would not pass, and so they're having to look at option B. Do you think in some way some of the Republican leaders are kind of like, hey, we put this out, and that way if it fails, we can just say, look, we gave it to the voters. They didn't care. That they're okay sitting in traffic. Is that what it is, or are some of the Republican leaders going to be torn up? Steve, what do you think?
I don't know. I don't want to have to get to that point. I'll tell you that right now. But, you know, I think that this was, you know, this was one of those things that, you know, it's been 10 years in the making. It's been more than a decade in the making. And, you know, Dr. Williams, you know, when you asked her that question saying, you know, what's plan B, I kind of agreed with her, which is I don't know that there is a plan B, because the issue here is that no matter what we do, no matter whether plan B is mass transit, well, how are we going to pay for that mass transit? Well, a T-Splice, and it looks like the T-Splice, you know, if it fails, you know, what would say that it wouldn't fail again? So, you know, I don't know that there's going to be a plan B. I don't know what we're going to do, and this is – it's a difficult issue because, like you said, it's failing amongst Democrats, too, for albeit a very different reason than amongst Republicans. But to me, it's just – it's rather disheartening that Democrats who want to see transit improvements are planning to vote against it, at least in the Atlanta metro area, because it doesn't go far enough.
Yes. I almost think if it fails – then what they may have to do, because a lot of the strategy has been local. I mean, they'll put out signs that says, widen this road, or they'll put a billboard, fix, you know, the traffic on Terra Boulevard. That was in the paper. I happened to see that one. And so I begin to think, could they somehow do somewhat of a local splice for transportation, much like they do with schools and other projects? And, of course, then the trick would be it would be much like we see in states. You'll drive on I-20 to the Alabama state line, and the road changes how it is. Sometimes your four-lane road on Georgia 20 up in Rome will go from four lanes to two lanes when you hit the Alabama state line. So you might have some of that. If one county decides to pay for the project and the other county doesn't, it ends the county line. Do you think something like that would work, Jim?
I don't know. I think what's happened here, David, is that say voters up here, it's not being sold to them well by those that support it. And what voters up here are hearing, are seeing, even though it's not really that way, is that, well, this is a metro thing. This is a metro Atlanta thing. And what does it have to do with us? As a result, the T-Splice in probably the most progressive county north of Fulton is not only going to fail, it's going to fail impressively with local officials and everybody else against it. Another thing that's happening is that the Republicans who pushed this forward, they had to come up with something on transportation. You know, we've pounded them on the big three that they've done nothing about: education, water, transportation. We've done it right here on this show I don't know how many times. This is their transportation thing. Unfortunately, it's a transportation TAX in an election year, and they're like, our Tea Party supporters are not going to warm up to this. So the people that put this forward are really dropping off in droves. You know,
yeah.
I mean, some of the leaders now in the state legislature, like Chip Rogers are coming out against it.
Yeah. Well,
absolutely
guys,
right.
the surroundings around me have changed. I was able just to walk around and talk with you in those last few minutes. I got to get out of an unfamiliar place. And, of course, since I'm a smartphone owner, my phone is my map. So I'm going to sign off. But, Tim, I'm going to let you pick a last topic for you and Stephen to discuss for the final 5 minutes, and you can do the real sign-off. Of course, we got, you know, Jimmy J.J. Dynamite Walker leaving the president. Yeah, of course, we got Romney getting booed at the NAACP convention. We got other things. Tim, if you'll pick one, I'm going to say good evening for the folks.
Okay, good evening to you, David. And, Steve, you and I are going to talk about what happened with Mitt Romney at the NAACP meeting this week. He decided to go. I think personally he planned this. He wanted it to be viewed as a bold move to go into the lion's den, even though he knew he would face a hostile audience. So he thought it would be a win-win with the public as he came out of it. I don't know if he expected to get robustly booed, not only with the Obamacare statement, but at several times during his presentation. And what few times he did get applause, it was only polite applause. So what's your take on this, Steve? Did it blow up in his face, or should he have gone, or what?
I think it was a nuclear bomb in his face. And the reason why is not that I don't think he should have gone at all. I do think it's a bold move, and I respect him for not sitting there and saying, you know what, Obama's won the African-American demographic, I'm moving out. And I think he's right to have gone there. The problem is what he said. Going out there and saying, if you want free stuff, go vote for the other guy, that's not what you say. Because what he's basically implying to a crowd full of African-Americans is, frankly, something that could be taken with a racial tint. See, I mean, there could be people in that room, and I would bet good money there were people in that room saying, why would you tell a room full of black people that if you want a handout, go to the other guy? And I think that's where he really went wrong, that he could have gone in there talking about how his jobs plan was better than Obama's and how it would have done better for the poorer Americans. I don't agree with that, but he could have talked about it. He could have gone in there talking about how, you know, in his words, Obamacare would have been bad for them. I mean, he could have said a million different things. And people in that room may have given him only polite applause or only respectful applause, but I don't think he would have gotten roundly booed for basically implying that black people want free stuff. And I think that's where he went wrong. And I think that's just another example of Mitt Romney making a stupid political decision by saying something that, because, and I say it all the time to everybody, Mitt Romney to me is basically R2-D2 with nicer hair. He's a robot. I don't believe he has emotion. I don't, and I'm not saying that as a, he's a bad person, but he just does not know how to talk about money. He doesn't know how to talk to people that are not moneyed. He's awkward. And I think a C-3PO with a hairpiece, you know, up there, he didn't know what to say, and he really messed up, and I think that was the problem.
In hindsight, and you know, you've worked in some campaigns, if you were a Mitt Romney advisor, would you have advised him to go in the first place?
You know, honestly, I probably would have. I would have said, you can think about it because, you know, and I've told my candidates before, if you go, you know, for example, one of my candidates, Patrick Thompson, who I hope will be on the cut of mine at some point in the future, Patrick went to a Chamber of Commerce event in Smyrna Vining. He was the only Democrat in that room. And I said, go in there because it will show that you have a little bit of chutzpah. You know, you're going to walk in there and you're going to talk about the issues and you're going to be honest with yourself, but you're not going to turn them off. And I don't think it's a problem necessarily going. I mean, R.J. Hadley, when he was running for senator, he went to a Tea Party meeting, and I respect him for it. I mean, you know, he wasn't going to get much support out there, but he would at least tell people, you know what, if I get elected your senator, I'm your senator too, and so I will be responsive to you. So I probably would have told him, you know, go there, but go ahead and give me the speech before you give it, because it can't be the wrong thing.
And on that note, I'm going to let you have the last word for tonight, because the old clock on the wall shows us that it's coming up on 8 o'clock. Steve, we certainly appreciate you sitting in for Catherine tonight, and we certainly hope that you won't be a stranger, that you will be right back with us here on the Kudzu Vine at some point in the future.
Absolutely. Just send me the invite, and I'll be on.
All right. Thank you, sir. And to all of our listeners, good night, and we'll talk to you next week on the Kudzu Vine.